Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have join us Steve C. DeBaca. Steve is the Executive Vice President and the Chief Patient Safety and Quality Officer of Royal Philips, which is a global company. He brings more than 30 years of quality and regulatory affairs experience in the medical technology industry. Prior to joining Philips, he was the EVP of Quality and Regulatory Affairs for Cardinal Health, supporting a $185 billion enterprise, and was a member of the operating committee. Prior to that, he served in a variety of executive roles within the medical technology industry. He's got some great insights to share around leadership and lessons that he's learned in his career. Looking forward to today's conversation with Steve.
So we go back a number of years and I've seen you kind of grow in your career as you've kind of progressed. And I'd love to hear a little bit of your career story for those that are listening, and look forward to just some of the highlights that you've had in your career.
Yeah, no, it's many of us would like to say we planned a career, but very few of us have. And I fell into that category of not a plan. I kind of fell into certain things and got lucky and or just happened to be where I am. So right now I am the Chief Patient Safety and Quality Officer at Philips, Royal Philips. And just for layman's terms, that means I have responsibility for end-to-end for quality, regulatory, clinical, medical. We have a transformation program management office. And so about 4,300 people covering all aspects of Philips. So all the businesses, all the different technologies around the globe, et cetera. And so I've been here just a little over a year. Prior to that, I was at Cardinal Health, leading the enterprise for quality and regulatory for their pharmaceutical distribution and the medical. Was at Zimmer Biomet, leading the quality for the orthopedics in Americas, which was kind of, Canada through Latin America through Argentina, and then I was at Danaher Diagnostics, and so responsible for quality, regulatory, and clinical med for four diagnostics groups, and then Boston Scientific for several years covering quality and regulatory compliance. And so a lot of that aspects have been fortunate in my career, but it's funny, people say, how'd you fall into quality? And I really fell into it simply because it's one of the few organizations that can call itself a hub. And what I mean by that is it touches so many different aspects. And so I didn't plan on it, as I said earlier. It wasn't like, okay, let's go into quality. It was just something that lends itself because it touched so many different things. And that's what I enjoy about it. It's just that you're able to be front-end product development, working with your R&D partners, working on strategy, working on the next generation. Obviously, very much engaged with manufacturing operations, the day-to-day product builds, delivery, et cetera. But equally with our sales marketing teams on customer service sales support. And so it was really one of those things where I got to touch a lot of different things and appealed to me and really challenged me. So I didn't plan for it, but I fell into it and have grown in my career, steady state in terms of different responsibilities and different scales. But something that if I had to do this all over again, I don't think I would do much different because it would have been so much fun. It's a fun ride. No doubt about that.
So I like to ask this question to most every guest. If you're able to spin back time and talk to that 22-year-old Steve who knew everything, I'm sure, at that, what advice would you give him?
A couple things. One, continue to have fun. When you're 22, you're not too sure about the world, et cetera. Approach it in an open, honest, have fun environment. But for me, I think the other thing I would tell myself is create and nurture your network. When you're 22, you're not thinking about a network. You're just trying to think about the day-to-day paycheck and, get the job done. But, it was only about another 10, 15 years later that I really learned that a network mattered. And a network mattered not just to, quote, find the next job, but a network mattered to really get additional guidance, insights. You don't have every answer, but somebody else probably does. And so the more that you nurture and really utilize your network, the better. A perfect example recently, we at Philips, we have an FDA inspection that has been scheduled, and we're trying to do intel on the inspector. And we noticed that she had done a fair amount of Medtronic's facilities. And so I reached out to my network and people I know from Medtronics and just said, hey, what do you know about the person? What are her likes, dislikes? Does she like, you know, coffee or tea kind of thing? But if you don't have that network, if you don't have that ability to kind of reach out and even ask, quote, simple questions, you're only going to be limited to what you know and what you can gain. So I'm a big believer that everybody has a different piece of the puzzle. And so when you put it all together, you make a better picture. And so I would tell myself, you know, at that 22-year-old kid, go create, foster, develop a network, because it's only going to make you better and smarter by having more access to more people out there who are, in my case, much smarter than me. So that would be the one advice I'd give myself, because I learned it, but it took about 10, 15 years before I really learned it.
So any advice you received early on that you, looking back on, should have ignored?
I don't think I'd ignore any advice. I necessarily may not have taken some advice. The biggest thing, and I learned later, was there was a thing about, you know, I started out in aerospace. So when I was an engineering degree, I started out in aerospace, et cetera. And there was a lot of people that, you know, aerospace at the time was high tech. And, you know, you were going to space. You were doing all these great things. And I had an opportunity to go into medical device. And I remember people telling me, don't do it. What's medical device? Band-aids. You know, it's like, and fortunately at that time, I didn't take the advice, but I didn't ignore it because I was trying. It made me go off and do more research. Okay, hey, what is medical device? What it is? And I realized that it was just a technology challenge. It was still just as much exciting. But if I had chose to ignore that or to abide by that, I would have been in trouble. So I would not say ignore anything, but really do your homework. Really ask yourself those tough questions. Go back there and say, is that really the good thing? Because usually advice is good, but not necessarily advice should be taken. And so that's what I would tell myself, is not ignore anything, but definitely challenge it.
So in what position did you have your first team that you managed? You were an individual contributor, and then you moved into more of a leadership role.
Yeah,
talk about that and what you wish you would have
done. Yeah, it was an interesting thing. So yes, I was an individual contributor, engineering, growing in my career, expanding. And it's a funny story. I was working at a company. I had the director of HR tap me on the shoulder and say, Steve, you got a few minutes to talk. You get nervous when the director of HR, when you're an engineer, and we were walking around and she goes, this is going to sound strange, but I want you to hear me out. So, okay. You know, you're trying to be a little, you're not too sure. She goes, I think you'd be perfect for another role outside of this company. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm getting fired. I mean, you go through all the things. And she said, no, listen to me out. She says, I believe you have potential. And I think, but to hone your skills, it would probably be better in a smaller company, so that you can bring your individual contributor skills, but expand your scope to do something different, but it's not so far reaching, it's out of it. And she mentioned that she had a friend that they were looking for at that time, a manager for the quality regulatory team, but it was a smaller company. And so she said, she thought of me. And I said, you're not trying to get rid of me. She goes, no, I just think you have potential, but for you to really get into that potential, you got to like kind of dive in, but in a pond that's not so deep or filled with sharks. And so, again, speaking of advice I didn't ignore, I went back home and I'm thinking, okay, are they trying to get rid of me, et cetera? And I came back to her and I said, I'd like to have a conversation, because I saw where she was going with it, you know? And that's where that network of people sometimes see things different than you do, and you don't allow yourself to see it. And so she saw something in me that I had not seen in myself. And so I pursued it, and I started out, and it was a small organization. It was an organization where I was going to have to do and manage at the same time. So that allowed me to kind of not get so far out of my comfort zone, but it forced me to be uncomfortable and things. And so really, I would tell myself at that time, as much as I tell me now, take the risk, take the opportunity, you know, especially if others see something in you that you don't see in yourself. And so it was a weird situation to be tapped on the shoulder that we'd like to, quote, see you in a different role. But it wasn't a negative. It was very much a positive. And so how do you make sure that you kind of put yourself in that perspective? You know, and sometimes we get so narrow-minded, we only look at what we know. Open up your field of view to what you don't see. And so that'd be the advice I'd give, is that when you're starting your career, and especially as you're progressing in your career, not everything is, quote, planned or known. And so sometimes take advantage of what's not planned and what could be, you know, things. So that would be the advice I'd give.
Yeah, that's great. So think back everybody has those moments where you have to step up, whether it's a crisis situation mm-hmm. or something that you're facing that you need to overcome and probably don't feel prepared for it. But talk about any examples of that that you have grown as far as in your career that you've kind of been told to solve an issue or solve.
Yeah. So when I was at Boston Scientific, I had just been there for about a year, and we had just not too long before that entered into the corporate warning letter. It was basically, you know, the FDA had said, look, you're quote so bad, we're just going to give you this giant letter that's covering all of Boston Scientific. And I was asked to take over the cardiovascular, which was the biggest group out of our Maple Grove facility here in Minnesota, to take over the lead to clear the warning letter. And it was one of those epiphanies, et cetera. And I remember when I was asked, I used the term, I was kind of a godfather moment. You know, it was like you didn't get a choice. It was like you had to take this. And I remember instinctively saying yes. And I did it for three reasons. One, I thought it was going to be a fun ride. You know, as scary and challenging as it was, I thought it was going to be fun. You know, it's something I was going to force myself to do something different, step out of my own comfort zone and really do. So that was one. Two is that people came to me and said, we'd like you to do this. And so I was like, okay, if they believe in me, why can't I believe? If they have faith that I can do this, maybe I can have faith. Now, maybe they were like the 10th person that finally got to me and everybody else said no. And I finally said yes, but I took it on the things. I think the third element was, if not me, then who? And it wasn't because I was trying to be, you know, super powerful, et cetera. I'm like, why not me? You know, and then really, I just, why not me? Why can't I do this? Why, you know, this would be fun, but at the same time, I'm going to learn and grow. And so it really wasn't something I was prepared for. It wasn't something I'd planned. It wasn't something I'd check the boxes and I'd built myself up and says, okay, now this is the next natural step. It was an accelerator. It was something that I had not really thought about. But once I started thinking about it, I went, yeah, that makes sense, et cetera. And the funny part, I tell people this, when I got that moment, it came with no extra money, with no extra title. It wasn't like, you know, when I said yes, all of a sudden paycheck increased and all of a sudden I got all these great titles. No. And I took that job literally instinctively because I'm like, this sounds like it's going to be fun. I can only get better. Why not? And that's where I really went. And so I think open yourself up to the potential for potential. Open yourself up for the opportunity when you don't really see the opportunity or it's not naturally a natural, you know, step-by-step opportunity. You know, sometimes they just come out of left field. Why not?
So everybody typically looks for somebody that they can draw from, at least maybe informally as a mentor or formally. Is that something that you pursued formally in your career to find those that could come alongside and mentor?
Yeah. And I think it's both formally and informal. There's also the formal moment where you reach out and there's somebody in, right. You know, that in a senior person or a more experienced person and you go and you reach out and you try to quote glean from them. You try to use them as a sounding board, as somebody that as a coach or, you know, things of this nature. But I would argue I benefited from a lot more informal. You know, I didn't necessarily have to, you know, enter to a program and sign up sure. And things of this nature. I really learned from a lot of different people. You know, and it was never the whiteboard, let me walk you through and teach you and things. It was more of, you know, being open, asking, just watching people, observing people, what they were good at, what they were not good at, you know, being vulnerable enough to ask questions. You know, I remember there was many times peers or somebody in a different world, I'd ask, hey, how did you do that? Or what made you do that? Or what were you thinking, et cetera. And so again, I'm just open yourself up to being vulnerable, open yourself up to kind of asking, quote, the dumb questions. Open yourself up to, you don't know everything. There's somebody else who probably knows equal, if not more, than you do. You know, ask. And so I've been fortunate. And over the years, especially if I've grown in my career, I've tried to make sure I give back. People took, quote, pity on me or took me under their wing or was willing to give me 5 minutes of their time to help me grow. Then I've always looked to give back. You know, how can I help a person who reaches out or if I see somebody struggling, why don't I help them along the way? Because again, I all of us have the ability to help somebody else, you know, and I always find when I do help somebody else, I always find that I help myself. It reminds me of what I need to remember or what I need to, you know, to remind myself of, you know, that you don't get so big in your britches, as my mom would say, that you can't always give back or learn and gain from. So I think it's that humility and that vulnerability. You know, make yourself humble, but make yourself vulnerable to, you don't know everything, go seek it formally or even informally.
Talk a little bit about some of the lessons you've learned by working globally. I know you've done that in several mm-hmm. positions, and we were talking the other day that the position you're in now is definitely very global, and your executive team, a number of them are in the Netherlands. And talk a little bit, just some things you've learned working kind of cross-culturally.
A couple things. Open yourself up to different perspectives. I think we have the tendency to take a very narrow U.S.-centric view. In reality, it's a bigger world than just the U.S. So open yourself up to different perspectives. Be willing to ask and be asked, quote, dumb questions. Sometimes, you know, we get so embarrassed to ask the dumb questions, we forget to ask them. Open your perspectives. The other thing I've learned, especially in these global positions, get out. Go to Gemba. Go to the people. It's funny, when I reach out and I travel, and it's a long distance, but I travel to my teams in Asia Pac. It's amazing how much goodwill you'll gain, because they know it's a long trip. They know that you're coming out. They know there's a cultural thing about, you know, hierarchy, et cetera. And so when you're willing to travel out there on your own, when you're willing to, for me, I'll stay up late on my time to have a phone call with my team in Asia Pac, because I don't want them to get up at midnight to meet my calendar. And so I think the more that you break down the barriers physically, when you break down the barriers of perspectives, when you ask the questions, when you invite questions, when you seek guidance, I think it's better, because again, everybody has so much to offer if you allow people to offer. And so I'm a big believer is break down the barriers, go ask, go reach out, invite people to come, you know, to you as much as you're going to them. Because again, we have so much to do globally that it can't be a single view. It can't be a single point, you know, of reference. It's got to be across the board, because I can't tell you what's happening in China because I'm not an expert in China. But if I go seek the experts, then I become much more educated, informed, and ready to make those kind of decisions. But yes, I think those are the key elements of, you know, don't let, you know, distance become a distance for you. Go shorten that gap, the gap of connections, the gap of understanding, and the gap of just, you know, being able to get the real source of truth.
So you sit on the executive committee of Philips. You've got, I'm sure you're presenting in front of the board. What have you learned? And we have some that are first-time CEOs that maybe don't have a lot of experience working with boards. Any advice you can give as an executive who's been in the
board? Yeah. Boards are people too. And they have their emotions, their good points, bad points in between. And I think we almost put this grandiose, you know, guru mentality on boards. In reality, they're human too, and they have things. Two, most boards, in the case of the Philips board, is very experienced, very knowledgeable, very thing. So you can also not just quote report out, but seek guidance from. We have the tendency to think it's a one-way street. You go in front of a board, you present, and you hope everything goes well. When in reality, you're doing that plus seeking their guidance, opening them up into the aspect. So I find that the more you treat them like you treat anybody else, the better. The more that you are humble but confident, the better. The more you're vulnerable but committed, the better. And so I just think it's a relationship like anything else. It's a thing. And so yes, you have to, you know, yes, they have a different perspective. Yes, they have, you know, different requirements. But at the end of the day, they're also on the same team as you are. We have also tendency to think it's the board and us. You know, no, it's a we conversation. They bring different requirements, different responsibilities, but at the same time, different perspectives, different knowledge, different experiences. And so I've been fortunate that the board at Philips has been very, very open, very honest, but very direct and forthright, which I love. And so again, I find it's no different of a relationship than in other places. I just want to make sure that they see and feel me just as much as I see and feel them. And so that's been the big, big change. But, you know, but yeah, that just, I think the biggest thing, remember they're human and they have great perspective. Take advantage of it.
So with Philips being such a broad, we talked about kind of the categories that they're in, broader than the med tech space, how have you gotten up to speed as quickly as you have, as far as to kind of figure out different segments of the business, which it was probably some of it is outside of where you've worked.
Well, first and foremost, I'm I love technology. I'm a geek for that stuff. So, I mean, I just want to go out and touch and play and things of this nature. But I think similar to the example I gave her, go out to the sites, go out to the teams. I'm a big believer that the real experts are the people on the floor, the manufacturing floor, the engineers, the product builders, et cetera. And so the more that you go seek their expertise, the more that you want to really get it. And I find that does a couple of things. One, you get unfiltered, unfettered information. It's not translated or lost sure. in the translation. Two, you establish that rapport. It's hard for me to quote, thou shalt do if I don't understand what people are doing. You know, it's easy for me to say, go work harder when I don't know what's causing them to work so hard. And so you got to break down those barriers, et cetera. I find they're the experts. If you give them the direct channel, if you give them the coverage, if you give them, lack of a better term, the permission by being there, by opening, by asking questions, it's amazing how much true information you're going to gain, how much you're going to do that. They're the experts. They know their processes. They know their products better than I'll ever know. And so I go and really try to break down those barriers and really drive it. And so the first year at Philips, I've been on the road a lot. You know, I joke that sooner or later I'm going to become a Dutch citizen because I've been in Amsterdam so often, et cetera. But that's how I endear myself. That's also how I educate and really inform myself, is I go to the source. And so I'm a big believer in that. So, and it's worthwhile. I still have much more to do. I haven't visited all the sites. I haven't visited all the countries that we operate in, but I've really made it a point to say, look, you know, they're the experts. They're the real SMEs. My job is to support them, not the other way around. So if they don't know me, if I don't know them, if they don't understand where I'm going, if I don't understand where they want to go, then we're not going to get there together. And so I'm a big believer in that. But that's the biggest thing that I think I've been able to try to do is to create that connection by ensuring that we're connecting.
Yeah, good. So books that you recommend to leaders.
There's a great book. In fact, if I was not an engineering major, I would have been a history major. But then I realized early in life that doesn't pay that well. So I wanted to, my little capitalist in me came out and became an engineer. But there's a great book. It's called Team of Rivals. The author is Doris Kearns Goodwin. And it's about Lincoln. And it really is amazing. And I've read tons of books on Lincoln. He's one of my favorite subjects. But this book looks at it differently. And it really highlights that Lincoln, going in his mind, we're going into the Civil War. I mean, there was crisis and chaos, et cetera. And he put in his cabinet the best of the best. And many of the people on that cabinet despised him, hated that they, quote, lost to him. How did this country bumpkin beat me? I mean, these were the preeminent, you know, leaders. You know, they had been governors and Congress and all kinds, senators and anything. But he knew they were the best and brightest. He knew that he needed the strongest team to face the challenges he was going. And so he learned that he had to, quote, tap down his ego to improve. He had to take away that, well, yeah, that they may not, quote, like him or agree with him, but they offered something that he needed. He didn't want to surround himself with yes men. And it's a great, because it's not only in the historical context, but it's in that things. The other thing that was a great book about it is he managed each one of those cabinet members different, because he wanted to really understand who they were, what was their button, how do they best operate, etc. And so he didn't manage one way, he managed to their way. And it's funny, at the beginning of his presidency, you know, they literally didn't like him, despised him. Several of them wanted to, like, literally sabotage him. They were like, look, I'm gonna sabotage this guy so that I'll become president, you know, 4 years down the road, etc. And by the time that he finished his first term before his assassination, they literally were the most loyal, you know, people in the world, because they realized that he hired them, or he got them in the cabinet, not because he liked them and he knew that they didn't like him, but that he hired them because they were the best and he needed the best, and he needed people who were going to challenge him and contradict him and again, not always agree with him. They also realized that he managed them each individually to their best abilities and the best things. And it's a great book. So again, if you ever get a chance, Team of Rivals, it's a big history book, which I love, but it really goes into the depth of his personality and his management style. And it's something that I want to try to emulate, you know, where I can bring in diverse talent to be diverse.
Yeah.
Great. Any favorite quotes?
My dad always sticks in my head, and it's funny. He used to say this when I was a kid, and especially when I was in college, and it's only become more pronounced as I've gotten older in my career. Common sense isn't common. And it's funny because we take things for granted. And so what it instilled in me, especially in times of chaos and change and transformation, don't always assume that everybody is on the same wavelength or the same. And so you have to make sure that you have to really be crisp and clear in your communications, crisp and clear in your direction, crisp and clear in what you're driving. Because we make the assumptions that everybody's on the same page. Common sense is common, right? No, it's not. And so how do you bring common sense to the equation? By making sure that what you're saying and doing is common, is sensible, is in the right direction. And so that means in some cases you have to make sure that you slow yourself down to speed up. You have to make sure that you bring everybody along for the ride. It's not just, how you succeed, it's how we succeed. And so that has stuck with me for a long time, because I was like, what do you mean common sense and common? Everybody has common sense. And I would say, are you sure? And then slowly but surely, he's proven to be a genius. I'm not going to tell him that because he'll get a big head, but he's proven to be a genius.
Well, hopefully he listens to this and then he'll hear. outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge?
Ah, great. I'm a big sports fan. I love sports. I'm looking forward to this weekend with the Super Bowl, et cetera. But for me, running. I've run marathons. I enjoy running. And I, for a couple of reasons. One, I always find that if I start running, I can focus on things and I solve all the world's problems, or at least my worldly problems. It's just an opportunity to kind of get some sweat on, get some, some tension out. But it just really, I can get in my own head. I can think about it, even though I could be on a treadmill during the winter or outside if it's nice. And I'm listening to music, I'm thinking about, but I'm just in my own head. And it allows me to kind of think, and it allows me to kind of just take the time to reflect. We get so busy in meetings and back to back and phone calls, et cetera, that when you get the chance, take the chance. When you get the opportunity, make it an opportunity. And so I go out and I taught myself, I'm going to go get exercise and, stay fit. Yeah, that's true. But most of it is just can I go get in my own head to figure out how to get out of my own head? And that gives me the opportunity. So running is my release.
So I need to ask this because I know you've traveled a lot. Favorite, mm-hmm. favorite place that you love to go to vacation?
We haven't vacationed in a while, but Australia. We did my wife and I did our honeymoon in Australia for 3 weeks, and it was great. I mean, it was the people are friendly. This is the diverse of cultures and town. I mean, it was amazing. And so I was able. You can be in a desert, literally. You can be on on the ocean. You can be doing all kinds of things. So Australia is somebody I would definitely recommend. It's a long trip. They plan for it. But Australia was one that I would highly recommend, just because it's such diverse, such things, and it's just very friendly, outgoing people that made it fun too.
What parting advice would you give a newer upcoming leader?
Take risks. And I know it sounds strange coming from the head of quality and regulatory, we're supposed to be this black, white, except take risks. Very little is known. If you don't take the risk, you don't know. If you don't take the opportunity, as I highlighted earlier, you never know what opportunities abide. I've always found that even when I failed, and I failed many, many, many times, I learned, I gained, I grew. But if you don't take the risk, if you don't take those, if you don't get that uncomfortable feeling, that butterflies in your stomach, if you don't take the why not me moments, I don't think you'll learn. I don't think you'll grow. I don't think you'll gain. And so I'm a big believer in take risk. Again, it just, especially when you're not sure, go get sure. I'm a big believer in that. And so, take risks. I know it sounds strange, but take risks, take opportunities.
Well, Steve, I appreciate you taking time to talk to us. Absolutely. Is, I know, helpful for our listening audience, and definitely wish you continued success and all you're doing at Phillips and your future.
I appreciate it. Again, anything I can do, Mark, ever again, let me know. I appreciate this opportunity. And like I said, if anybody can learn from, quote, my failures, please do. I've made too many. And then again, this is an opportunity for me to give back, and I absolutely appreciate that opportunity. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com.
This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.